Off the Ball Breakfast.
I've used Rory McIlroy's achievement as personal growth for myself. You can overcome adversity to lead your business in Q2.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Nathan Murphy was in Liverpool yesterday, so we'll get the very latest from him about the situation when a car ploughed into the celebrating fans in a couple of minutes' time. In the meantime, we say good morning, Arthur. How are you?
Hello.
And we say good morning to you, John Duggan.
Morning, Ger. Morning, Arthur.
I want to start with the situation in Mayo. Obviously, yesterday we started the show sending our best wishes to Kevin McStay. News came through late last night in advance of the county board, the extraordinary county board meeting, that he was actually stepping back and that Stephen Rochford was going to be taking charge for the rest of the season. So obviously we wish Rochford the very best of luck, and Mayo are, I guess, they said very fortunate to have somebody of Rochford's ability to step into it. But obviously Kevin McStay needs some time to recover, and we do very much send our best wishes, because ultimately that's really all that matters. The EGM last night, though, heard extraordinary details of what's been going on, and the GEA president and the general secretary of the organisation, Tom Ryan, CEO essentially, both presented to try and get out in front of what they say is a campaign against current and former executives of the Mayo County Board to explain the situation with regards to the finances. And there's remarkable detail. Such remarkable detail that Tom Ryan actually points out that they might be in danger of breaching a confidentiality clause with their banks. They managed to get a series of loans to essentially bail out Mayo GAA, but by reorganising the loans, they've reduced the interest rates and the interest payments to a point that they're now, it seems, quite manageable. It used to be 46 grand and the monthly payments came down to 34, and now they're down to 25 a month, and they've lengthened the remaining term. So they've taken these big loans, they've consolidated them, and they've spread them out over a longer period of time, and they've made it more manageable for Mayo. Mayo County Board still owes 7.8 million. That's the capital outstanding. Ryan said they aren't usually willing to discuss publicly the financial affairs of any county or club. He wanted Mayo delegates to hear it directly. A key element of the deal with various banks was a non-disclosure clause, and I'm sure other people who are in debt to the banks are like, so you can get a write down if you're, you know, if you're guaranteed by the GA. I'm sure the FAI are reading this going, oh, well, that's interesting. How did that happen? Could I maybe get a bit of a write down? So he admitted that maybe flirting with the non-disclosure clause as he's breaking down the figures which are now in the papers today. So we'll see. The GA took on the loan and divided into two, loan A and loan B, as a write-off portion that still exists on Mayo's books. So I'm not sure if that's being written off by Croke Park or if it's being written off by the banks, but that's the details in the papers today. Anyway, the campaign that was waged, Charlotte Burns, really, without naming names, right, and there are pains to point out that for legal reasons they're not going to name names about the people who are waging that what they say is a campaign against them. I'm sure it wouldn't take you too long to try and work out who they're talking about. The nature of this campaign includes threatening and abusive emails targeted at individual members of the county board, social media posts making a raft of false accusations about officers of the county board, as well as inaccurate and defamatory articles that were published online. That's what the Mayo County Board Chairman Seamus Toohey opened the meeting by saying. And then the emails were read out by the county secretary. Aside from the threatening correspondence directed at county board members, the individuals behind this campaign, this is what Seamus Toohey is saying, have also published a series of blatant false and inaccurate claims online relating to the financial arrangements of Mayo County and indeed GA headquarters and Croke Park. So everybody is involved in this. There was some incredible detail here from Jarlath Burns. He also said he's revealing correspondence from the unnamed party. I feel what's happened in this county, the level of threat, intimidation and toxic activity has gone way beyond what is appropriate for disgruntled and angry people to correspond with. I received 8 emails today. So did Tom, CC'd to everyone on the table, 8 emails today from the same person. I'll tell you one example of toxic activity, he went on. I received an email saying, are you aware there are 5 members of the Mayo Senior Football Panel living in Dublin in an area where it is not laid out for residential use? Now, this is an aside, right? This isn't quote. What the hell is that? What we were speculating, is it like a carnival tent? Is it like, what is it? Is it a mobile home parked outside an office somewhere, you know?
Is it an office?
Is it an office space? Are they just beds in an office space?
Do you get a prize if you get the right answer?
I'd love to know. I should go back to St. Charlotte Burns. It's very serious. I'll tell you one example of toxic activity. I received an email saying, are you aware that there are 5 members of the Mayo senior football panel living in Dublin in an area which is not laid out for residential use? I am reporting these 5 players to Dublin City Council. Lo and behold, they were reported and put out of it. Had to move. 5 players from your clubs. You have to ask yourself, what is the mentality of someone who would do that? Is that person from Mayo GEA? What is their agenda? It's a good point. Well, I mean, what are you doing?
But he says that like it's, I still feel, I know it's only a small element of it, but I still feel there's a lot of questions there. He talks about that living on non-residential property as if it's, we should all understand what that is, or it's, I just don't know what that means.
A squat?
Like.
I was watching the thing with the KLF, they had a squat.
Before they burned the money, was it?
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
It seems that there's a big show of strength though from the Croke Park hierarchy with Mayo GA, and there was a motion of confidence passed in the county board officers, the top people in the Mayo County Board last night. So I don't know if circling the wagons is the right words.
Oh, but, definitely, yeah.
And the interesting quote in Tom Ryan's, I will say it, Mayo's 1 million write-off is one of the biggest, highest single value write-offs that's transpired over the course of it. And I remember I spoke to a very, very senior person in the GA once a few years ago who's no longer involved in the GA. And they were just giving out yards about one of the counties and how they're managing their financial affairs. And I was just thinking to myself, why is this just not all centrally managed by Croke Park?
I guess because of politics. And these are people who give of their time and it is their passion and their lives in many instances. And so they fight tooth and nail to have, and I'm not talking about Mayo County Board, but county boards in general and the club delegates to county boards and then club chairman. So you kind of go through it. And the building up of fiefdoms on family lines, on clique lines, on actual party political lines in clubs around the country. It's so forget it, Jake. Sure. Chinatown.
You can't get rid of the provincial things, isn't that?
So a lot of claims obviously have been made about how Mayo are running their affairs, and Ronan Curran in the Examiner, Maurice Brosnan's article, their secretary said in a quote, let me be very clear at this point, the claims published online over recent weeks about Mayo's finances are utter nonsense.
Now obviously the GEA at central level had to step in to bail them out. And they had to renegotiate with the banks to reduce the debt to a point where it was sustainable. So, while there is a display of power, it's like, we've got this because we're the adults in the room. But Mayo did need help, and Mayo did need bailed out in the aftermath of it. So I think it's fair that members of the GA would go, why is the story here? How did this happen? And it is fair enough that actually, I know they're not allowed to talk about some stuff because of confidentiality, but equally, for transparency's sake, for rank and file GA members of Mayo who are probably paying into a levy or a lottery, or tickets are more expensive because they're trying to pay down the debt and raise funds, I think it's only fair enough that they did come out. There's one other bit on Charlotte Burns there which I missed. Why would you be so vicious as to want to do that to 5-year county men who are living in Dublin and the county just wants to ensure they are living in good, comfortable quarters with plenty of nutrition? we're feeding them somewhere. Maybe was it army barracks? Is that a possibility?
Well, that would be state owned, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but not for residential.
I don't think you'd get onto Dublin County Council about it, though. There's even strange language, comfortable quarters.
Yeah, what are they?
It doesn't suggest it's a home.
I'm very interested in this now.
He said it so nonchalantly.
Right, it is 7:40. If you want to get involved this morning, we'd love to hear from you. 087-9180-180 is the WhatsApp number. Off the Ball Breakfast is with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. Now, yesterday on the show, we had Nathan on talking to us about the joy and celebration around Liverpool and what was going to happen next. This morning, we have Nathan on in the aftermath of a fairly horrific incident yesterday. Nathan, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm glad to be home. It was a fairly shocking end to what had been a remarkable coming together of people throughout yesterday at Liverpool. I mentioned yesterday morning a million people, and you sort of throw that number out there without realizing what it means. Remember, Liverpool, sort of Dublin-sized city, quite a centralized area where people all like to congregate on days like this, and then to have that many people that close together, all in harmony, all enjoying themselves, all celebrating, and for it to have this tragic end, though the relief, I think, for most people this morning is that somehow, when we see the footage, somehow nobody was killed.
Yeah, so the footage began to emerge yesterday evening of a car slowly and then quickly revving up. You were actually just around the corner from this, were you?
I was actually at the end of Water Street watching the parade. So I went down to Liverpool yesterday lunchtime and quickly realised that this wouldn't be a case of finding a nice spot and relaxing and watching the bus go by. As I walked down Water Street, there was a cordon there with some stewards. They were trying to move people along. This is sort of 3 o'clock. This is probably 2.5 hours before the bus goes through to further down the Strand, because already at that stage it was absolutely crammed. I went down, I had my microphone with me, so they let me through, and it was like sardines down there. Everywhere you looked, there were people. There was some building work going on one of a sort of 3 or 4 story building just to the left of where I was, and every part of the scaffolding was covered in Liverpool fans hanging off it. Now, it was all very good-natured. Everyone was just singing their songs, but it couldn't have been packed any tighter. In fact, about 10 minutes before the bus was coming, I saw some people leaving with their children because it had become just too much. So that was just right at the end of Water Street, around 50 metres from where the incident happened. And I was looking back at some of the videos I'd taken, and the Liverpool bus goes by at 5:45 at pretty much exactly 5:45. And like around then was just, you know, the entire city was singing "You'll Never Walk Alone" in unison together as the bus goes past. Like this outrageous level of emotion and outpouring of joy from everybody. But the second the bus went by, everybody was going straight back home because it had been torrential rain all day in Liverpool. Everyone was soaked through. So I started walking back up Water Street with thousands upon thousands of other people, but it was moving slowly. I think everybody understood the sheer volume of people that were there. Nobody was rushing. There was nobody pushing. There was no crushing, anything like that. And I'd left my equipment in a hotel just the next street over. So peeled across in there at about 5:50. I took video actually just right where the incident had happened at about 5:50, 10 minutes beforehand. And you can see the sort of scale of the crowd that is there. And to hear the news then filter through just a few minutes later that a car had gone through this crowd, like to give the only comparison I could give of, like this would be like a car driving down the Joneses Road 10 minutes after the All-Ireland final. Like that is how packed the streets of Liverpool were in the minutes after the parade.
Reports today, 4 children... reports today, 4 children among 50 people injured after the car ploughed through the crowd. 27 people taken to hospital. 2 suffered serious injuries, including a child. A 53-year-old man has been arrested, obviously very quickly, given the situation that we're in the world at the moment. They very quickly established that it was a white British man. One thing that I think probably needs remarked on here is just the work that was done immediately by the police and the stewards to prevent the crowd from getting to him.
Yeah, because justice will have to take its course. And, you know, unfortunately, the world we live in right now, it was probably important that the police got the information out around his ethnicity, which is just a sad reflection of particularly the online world right now, where you have people just hoping almost for another outcome, it felt like, looking to try and spark something in Liverpool last night. But obviously what happened was heightened in terms of the number of people who were affected by this because of the crowd. But thankfully, it also meant that there were a huge amount of paramedics very close by that were ready and able to swing into action very, very quickly. And I've no doubt that that saved an awful lot of lives last night. And it does feel like an absolute miracle that nobody was killed I was talking to a couple of lads from Dublin who were sort of wandering around at the police cordon about an hour afterwards, and they were on the street, they were almost hit, and they were just shell-shocked. One of them said to me it had gone in the matter of moments from being the best day of his life to the worst day of his life, and the picture they were painting was a horrific one. And listen, the picture is there for everybody to see. I'm sure people have watched the videos online at this stage of what happened, and it's just inexplicable that something like that could happen so soon after the end of the parade.
Was the management of the parade controlled and efficient, Nathan? Should cars even be in the area at all?
Yeah, I think that's probably where the questions are going to start now. Again, the scale of this is almost unprecedented. It was a 10 to 15 mile route. So where, if you were to bring in a cordon, would you start? Like the bus almost did a loop of the outer ring roads of the city. And I ended up, again, just to give a sense of the scale of this, I was covering the match, obviously, on Sunday. There was no chance of getting a hotel in Liverpool on Sunday night, so I ended up staying in Manchester. Thought I'd get the train down early yesterday morning, soak it all up. Went to Piccadilly, went to Victoria in Manchester around 11 a.m. yesterday, and just couldn't get on a train. Like, the trains were so packed arriving into Manchester to get to Liverpool, there was no way of getting on a train. So I ended up getting a taxi that should take about 40 minutes, took well over 2 hours. The roads were just rammed with Liverpool supporters getting to the city as quickly as they possibly could to try and savour this. So the scale of the amount of people that was there, I've never quite seen anything like it. And you get out of the taxi and was able to drive quite close. It's a sea of red, but it's just a wall of people. And security was very chilled out, I would have said. It didn't feel like it was wall to wall with police officers or anything like that. The only thing I saw in terms of cars was actually, when I was thinking back afterwards, as I sort of peeled off Water Street, there's a small car park there that holds maybe 25, 30 cars. And I saw people sort of rushing back and getting in and out of the rain, and thinking at the time that they're probably going to be stuck there for 3 or 4 hours. But it does seem that there were cars parked along the street, and that cars earlier in the day had obviously been allowed quite close to the Strand, which is that final destination for the parade, and had been allowed to park there in the car parks and on the side of the street. And I'm sure now, as people start to reflect on what happened, there needed to be some sort of a cordon from very early on in the day further out. It was at that scale of people, a million people, again, it's just hard to fully get your head around that. It's hard to cover every single aspect, but I think people will be wondering how. And again, this is 15 minutes, within 15 minutes of the parade finishing, within about 50, 60 metres of where the bus went past, that a car is able to be driving along that street.
Yeah, not obviously not supposed to be. So, I mean, I guess the policing will come into sharp focus in the immediate aftermath of this. The news this morning from the Liverpool City Metro Mayor, Steve Rotherham, still 4 people who are very, very ill in hospital, he says. Asked whether or not this is an increase in the previous number of seriously injured given by the authorities last night, as 1 adult and 1 child. He says, not directly. Of course, they're in liaison with the police and the ambulance services. Last night, they had 2 goal command meetings. One was really late in the evening, so he's expecting further updates this evening. Yeah, and I guess just, can you maybe paint the picture before this happened in terms of the atmosphere and the conviviality of everything? It did seem like it was just, as you say, that proper outpouring that hadn't been allowed to happen during COVID. And I know there were parades, but this kind of seems like there was a mass movement from people from weeks out planning to come yesterday because they knew what was going to happen.
And it was a mass movement from weeks out. I remember walking out of Anfield the day Liverpool won the title and been shocked by the amount of people just stood there at the Kop who clearly had been outside watching the game. And myself and Brian Kerr were commentating on the match, and we were looking to get back to our taxi, and you just couldn't move. Again, it was that wall of people. So that sort of prepared me almost for yesterday. And it was a bank holiday in England yesterday as well, so everybody was off work, and the fact that they didn't get to celebrate in 2020 absolutely played into people from all over England, and not just all over England, you know, a huge amount of people that travel over from Ireland from the day just to be there, just to get a sense of it. And Liverpool's a great, great city. to go out in. There's a lot of bars. There's a lot of restaurants. It knows how to handle a decent sized crowd. It knows the people go there to have a good time, to have a few drinks. And down where the Strand is, which was right at the end, remember, of a very long parade, you know, I think from lunchtime, that was packed. And in those final couple of hours beforehand, people were sort of scurrying around trying to find any space. And where I was, as I say, every single viewing space was taken up. You're looking up at people hanging off scaffolding over the parade route, thinking, Jesus, like this is risky. You know, as I say, people with children probably maybe regretting bringing them because it was just too crowded and too overwhelming. But everybody was getting into it, and every song that you could possibly think of that has been sung on the Cop through the years was been sung in the minutes leading up to the bus coming. Of course, when the bus comes, it just zooms past. You can barely even hear it. You can barely even see it because there's just the red flares that every time you see any coverage of Liverpool at the moment is dominating. And it was red flares all across the city. I was just in front of where the Liver building is, and you couldn't even see the Liver building as the bus was going by. But as I say, it was done on the understanding, I think, that everybody was looking out for each other. And, you know, unfortunately, Liverpool have found themselves in situations over the last couple of years, obviously in the Champions League final, where, you know, the fans have had to police themselves, have had to make sure that everybody stayed in line, that there was no crushing, that things didn't get out of hand. And it was chaotic as the evening went on. Like, it was probably too much for the city to deal with, that influx of people. I had a flight home last night at midnight, and to be honest, I sort of assumed by the time it got to 10 o'clock I wouldn't be getting on it. I went up to Liverpool Lime Street station, and you couldn't get in within 100 feet of it. I've heard reports of people queuing for 4 hours to get into Liverpool Lime Street station. It didn't feel like there were trains leaving. The entire city was gridlocked, and I don't think that was because of this incident. I think that was just because so many people had come to Liverpool yesterday, and I'm not sure they were prepared for that. I'm not sure you can prepare for that influx of people. But it was a surreal end to the day then, Jer, because obviously I went down to where this had happened, and there was the police cordon, and there was a lot of witnesses in shock. But just around the corner, like, this is one street over from the Cavern District, so it's one street over from one of the main party centres of Liverpool. And there you've still people singing, not fully understanding what had happened, people still out enjoying their day. And 100 metres away, you have this terribly, terribly difficult scene. So it was a strange, strange evening. And as I say, a very memorable day up until 6 o'clock, just because you're looking around going, something like this would probably never happen again. And then a very, very surreal end to it.
All right, Nathan, good stuff.
Thanks, Nathan.
Thanks, lads.
Newspaper headlines, The Eye. Newcastle want another striker to partner Isak. They're going to change their style. We were lucky not to go down, admits Eriksen. Christian Eriksen, who's on his way out, says we could have been relegated.
Spurs legend.
things have definitely, I think you've seen progress. Of course, the results haven't shown that, he says, but definitely 100% the results haven't shown that. The football we came from to this is obviously going to take time to adapt. The bad football we were playing that made us finish 7th or 8th, was that where they finished?
The grade in the Telegraph United is F.
F or fail. I've already done that one. Novak Djokovic mulls the end of my road.
Is he still in papers?
He is, yeah. He's well, if he wins, it'll be...
I'm sick of it.
If he wins, it'll be remarkable. Dennis Walsh dropping a little bit of Shakespeare on you this morning. Waterford find that Summer's lease hath all too short a date.
There's a really good line in this. Consider this ridiculous anomaly. The Derry footballers play their first championship match in 48 days of the weekend, yet the group stage is the provincial hurling championships. We're rattled off in 36 days, all 25 matches. It's like slugging a pint of stout in one swallow. Don't stop at the G. I know that feeling, Dennis.
So this is now becoming an issue, right? And people, I think, agree with the fact that, like, the hurling season's over for many counties and May is still in full bloom.
No Clare, no Tony Kelly, no Lee Chin until next year.
It is mad, isn't it?
No Jamie Barron, no Stephen Bennett. you know. But then Kieran
Chapman. You don't care, Arthur, because you're from Limerick.
It's not, and it's your,
you're care. Like the, you're like the big, Wexford, massive.
Wexford have played five times.
But five times in shit weather, apart it's from not, like this year. But normally it is.
Look, it's, well, like, it's not like what? So, like, okay, people want club players to have a set structure. All right, so we have a split season. So that's why that's there. And people are generally, I think the general consensus is, at least from club players.
Players going off to the States now.
I'm all right, Jack, says Limerick Hurling fan.
It's not that. This system works for me.
I'd much rather it was spread out. It makes no difference to me when games are played. You'll enjoy it regardless.
So then you agree with everybody here?
No, but I'm just saying, like, people are saying as if, oh, we've not had a chance to see this. They've played five times. But nobody wants to watch Wexford Antrim. That's the crucial part. Or Wexford Dublin or whatever else. No one's watching those games. Comparatively, so it's like, and I appreciate probably the issue is they're all on at the same time, so that makes it a shame of it. But saying like, oh, we don't get to see whoever or Jamie Barron again or Shane Bennett or what's the, like, it's like you know, they've lost two games, like Waterford lost,
yeah,
whatever, three games,
won the first one, they lost the next three. But I think Kieran Shannon kind of maybe probably has a compromise point. Munster needs measure of brutality. You need the intense jeopardy nature of the Munster Championship, but the schedule is the problem. I quote here, the main problem for Waterford at the moment is not the format, it's the schedule. The last round robin game for each team should be played in June. If Waterford's four games have been staggered over an 8-week period, a game typically every second week, you'd have less cause for complaint, Peter Queeley there.
Yeah, I'd be all for that. Again, I've no problem spreading it out. I do think it's too early, but I just don't buy the thing of, oh, I don't get to see such and such player again when they're playing more games than they've ever played. You have more chance to see them now than ever before. Like, it's not like we're going past a golden era where it's like, oh, you got to see these guys so much. You just saw them maybe once or twice in July.
I think the point is that all of the good football teams get knocked out of their provincial championship and then they get back in again. There's another opportunity because they're separate competitions. Essentially, the All-Ireland Series is a separate competition from the provincials, right? Like, Clare last year, beaten in the Munster final, went on to win the All-Ireland. They're separate competitions, except that only a tiny number of teams and some other teams that we randomly decide are allowed to continue on in the All-Ireland series because they've won a second tier competition are allowed into it. It's just a slightly mad system.
Hmm. But like, I think Morris made this point yesterday, and it was, I think, the first time I've actually heard it kind of said, it's like, you can't replicate it because we don't have the depth of teams.
But how do you get the
like
depth of
Waterford, who would probably, I would argue Waterford over the course of the last five round robins, you would say more often than not, they probably would have got out of Leinster, right? And they can't get out of Munster.
Right.
So if you think about it then...
That means we do have the depth of teams and we're not servicing them properly.
We don't have the depth of teams.
They should still have been in the All-Ireland Series on a 1-8 ranking.
For sure. But like,
they should still have been alive.
You can't do, like, what's the point then? What, like, you're just, these games are meaningless.
No, there's a championship for which there's a trophy, and trophies. Well, sorry, Munster, we're told that in the papers today, Seanie McGrath is saying, I cherish my Munster medals. There is going to be a massive hunger for the Cork people.
Why does he cherish them? Because everything.
Because Munster finals are sacrosanct.
Exactly. But it won't.
But he also cherishes
them.
But he also cherishes them when he was playing. It was more meaning on winning a Munster title as well when he was playing.
100%.
I think if Hoggy wins one in 2 weeks, it'll mean the world to him.
But Hoggy's won a few. Like, Hoggy has about three or four Munster.
But I will say with the Munster Championship is, it does steal you to win the All-Ireland. There hasn't been a non-Munster winner since 2017. 100%. I, like,
100%. Couldn't agree with you more. And it's the same thing with Clare.
But I hate this talk, even talk about this because I hate it so much. But the schedule, you've got this league competition, which is a phony war, and then you have a championship which is incredibly intense, and then that's it. The leagues to me do my head in because why don't you have a proper championship league for hurling with eight teams in it, and you play each other twice, and then the first two or four go into the All-Ireland series.
Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah. Why don't we do that and then have a softer provincial championship at the start of the year? Or maybe hurling and football in the calendar need to be decoupled. But this thing about the split season, like, you're trying to tell me all club championships are now, oh, we have all Tony Kelly back, Shane O'Donnell back, Jamie Barron, Stephen Bennett, Lee Chin. We're all going to go straight into club championship next week until the end of the year. Yeah. That's not realistic.
It's not for them, though, is it? Like, it's for all the guys we don't know.
Like, it's not for the Stars.
But sorry, those matches don't happen for months and months.
Like, but it's still the fact they can plan.
The argument is, well, we have to get rid of this hurling championship now because of the split season.
I disagree. I do disagree with the thing that I do think it's too early and it's over too soon. There's only three big weekends of hurling left.
Which is madness.
It is madness. But I just disagree with the notion that you should have, like, so say, take this year. Imagine if you had it from a Waterford point of view. They've lost three games out of four, but you're like, oh no, but you're still going to the All-Ireland. It's like, what the hell is the point in the first part of the Munster Championship then? It's meaningless.
They might have a better chance of getting the All-Ireland if they didn't have 6 days to prepare for a Limerick match.
Potentially, but like, I still think
I mean, they weren't that far away in some of the games. And also, how do you actually get Waterford to a point where they are, they do have strength and depth? So all of the best teams now will continue to play and train on for the next 2 months. Waterford will go off and not have the extra 8 or 10 high quality sessions with loads of contact hours. Or sorry, 8 or 10. It's probably 15 or 20 high quality sessions in the best of weather when they actually train on as a group and understand each other's dynamics. And they come back next October already behind the teams who have ascended into the latter stages. Like, it's actually juiced in favour of the top teams. And if you... You know, to Morris's point, I accept there isn't depth at the moment, but how do you get Antrim and Kildare and Laois and Offaly and Westmeath to a level where they're actually going to be properly competing? It takes money and it takes time and it takes investment, but you can't make that time and money and investment because what's the point? They're going to get hammered in the Leinster Championship and then the season's over and then they're yo-yoing between divisions. Like, if you think slightly long-term about this, then the system works really well for the top counties, but not for anybody else, or the top counties with loads of investments.
I don't know. It's literally been the way it's always been. It's like
we only got the round robin in what, 2018.
No, but we've never had a difference we don't have a difference in. There's never. It's always been so stratified. I don't think any change you make to the senior championship.
Well, Offaly and Galway managed to make breakthroughs in the 80s, right? So it hasn't always been.
Offaly, Galway got into All Ireland semi finals at a given in the 80s.
Okay.
So it's like, but you know what I mean? Like,
Offaly didn't.
Offaly did manage to make a breakthrough. Had an amazing core at a club level, like a very small, tight knit community.
So it's possible to like.
But it's not sustainable. Crucially.
Maybe it will be
they end
now.
Up playing
because
they have, the Christian Cup.
Maybe it will be now because they actually have put structures in place to try and grow the game.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. But like, it's still a case
of... Let's do nothing to help them. System works fine as it is.
It's not about Nostin. Like, Offaly are not the problem. Offaly are not an example of a... Like, Offaly clearly had all that potential there and they've harnessed it and done remarkable work to get them back to a point now where if maybe you're within a 5-10 year period where they could be looking up at challenging Galway Kilkenny, but they're miles
off. You could have a Munster and Leinster knockout championship in the spring, say February, March, and then you could have a league championship spread over a long period of time with a very All-Ireland for the top two or top four, and you'd have a lot of matches and that'd be
two
much better
two divisions, promotion, relegation.
Yeah, you'd have a much better way of doing things.
I think the day that the Munster championship's gone, we're goosed.
The what?
If the Munster championship's gone or devalued, we're goosed. That's what? It. It's the unique selling point of the hurling championship. It is the most sacrosanct part of it.
Well, no, this is the most sacrosanct part of the All-Ireland final.
I don't think so.
You're telling me that the Munster hurling championship is more important than the All-Ireland final?
It's not that it's more important. I think it's more historically relevant and the traditional element of it. I'm not saying it's more important. It's obviously far bigger to win All-Ireland. But the All-Ireland is not for the same people who are at Munster Championship, and like I'm just saying, as a degree of numbers game, the All Ireland final sells out whoever's in it, few exceptions, but more or less whoever's in it. But you go back and you look at the All Ireland semi final last year between the two best teams in Munster, Croke Park sells out with Limerick and Cork there.
Two best teams in Munster. Clare were in the Munster final. Clare won the All Ireland.
I get you, but I'm just two biggest supported teams in the province. Then I still think when you go back and you look at this year, then. Where are all the sellouts happening? They're all happening across Munster.
They're happening because of the insane jeopardy.
Yeah, but it's for the prize at the end because it's still tangible.
Because in the years after the backdoor came in, there was a bit of a dip in the Munster final and a bit of a dip in the attractiveness of Munster. And then that's been heightened again because of the jeopardy, the insane jeopardy that you have with the round robin series.
I think you'd be mad to kind of go, no, we got to take that apart. That's not worth it. Like, it's the best thing in the GA at the minute.
Okay, we'll come back to this. Rashford, Villa farewell, champing at the bit. Marcus holding out for Champions League club as United prepare Cunha deal. So he's obviously for sale. Apparently Barcelona are circling, which is what I would say if my
careful agent, what you wish for. Can you sustain his form is the question with him.
Was doing a deal. And then
Levi Caldwell likes Legos, the other thing.
Yeah, he got the Home Alone house. Apparently, if you're into your Lego, it's very good. McStay steps back is the headline on all the tabloids as well. Napoli looks like the club for Kevin De Bruyne.
I see Cunha to United looks pretty on. David Connolly was on Football Saturday raving about him for about 10 minutes.
Right, he is very good. Hopefully the weight of the jersey isn't so much. Anthony's in the papers today saying that things got so bad at United that he couldn't eat. Maybe that was more to do with his off-field stuff than the on-field stuff. Farrell has returned to Premiership. Owen Farrell's being linked with a move to Gloucester just after Ross Byrne is signed. Surely that's not going to happen. That would be bad luck for Ross Byrne if that was to happen. It's very unlikely given Gloucester's financial situation. Irish Pride, Quinn hails McCabe as Ireland skipper jets in. So Louise Quinn talking about Katie McCabe wearing her Irishness on her sleeve as she celebrates with the Champions League trophy. Massive celebrations from Arsenal as well. And then Napoli ever after. So De Bruyne there, Raducanu was sick but still won. She gets to play Iga Swiatek as her reward for coming through in the first round. So you'd expect her to go out at that stage. James Milner, one of the youngest players to play in the Premier League, and he could end up being one of the oldest players to play in the Premier League. Also owner of one of the best social media accounts. Well, when it used to be okay to own a social media account. Good fellow, James Milner. Delighted for him.